Chapter 13.
"What do you mean?" I demanded, and turned toward Sawadi. "Where did she go?"
"I don't know," the snow leopard demihuman sobbed. "I went home after our conversation last night, and we went to bed. Then I woke up early this morning, and she was missing from our home."
"Was anything else taken?" I asked. "Her clothes, a bag. Are you sure she didn't leave?"
"Lord Evan, I know Mata,"
Sawadi said in a low voice as he met my gaze with tear-soaked eyes.
"She would never in 1,000 years walk out on our life. I know someone took her."
"And we'll find her,"
Isi promised.
"I won't let anything happen to her. We've already sent dozens of our men out into the city to find her."
"They need to search everywhere,"
her brother said, as he wiped away another tear.
"No stone should be left unturned."
"And none will be,"
she agreed.
"The guards have been ordered to search every house in Narsklo."
"We'll join in the search," I said, and the rest of my people nodded their agreement. "Just tell us where to go."
"Talk to Tecumseh,"
Isi pointed at her husband across the room.
"He's been sending out the marching orders."
"Got it," I said, as I turned and led my people over to the king. "Tell us where you need us. We'll look for her too."
"That's kind of you, Lord Evan," Tecumseh replied, and sent off another group of guards.
"Are you sure?"
"Yes,"
I cut him off. "Ahem, Your Majesty, I'm sure. We want to help."
"Okay,"
he murmured and spun the map around to face us.
"Here's the castle, and I've sent guards to these four areas already. I could use another set of people to search the market. It's right over here."
The king pointed out a section of the city that looked to be about 4 by 5 blocks. "Yeah, we can handle that," I confirmed. "So what does Mata look like?"
"She looks like a snow leopard demihuman."
Tecumseh stared at me with an arched eyebrow.
"What else would she look like?"
"Well, some people like to shake things up," I said and pursed my lips. "How about what she's wearing?"
She usually wears blue robes," he replied. "And she always has her blue earrings. They were a gift from her mother."
"That helps," I said with a nod. "And we have no idea who took her?"
"None."
Tecumseh shook his head and looked past me to his weeping daughter and brother-in-law.
"This city has lost its mind."
"We'll get it put back together," I said, as I put my hand on the king's shoulder. "Don't worry, Your Majesty."
"I'm going with you,"
Nakoma said, as she rose from her chair and wiped away her tears.
"I need to find my aunt."
"You really shouldn't," I started to argue.
"I'm going,"
the princess growled as her furry white ears pressed against her head. The thought of leading her to what could be a very bad situation for her aunt made my heart sink. But Nokomis was determined. I didn't have a good argument without saying the negative possibilities out loud, so I decided to just let her join us. With that, I guided my team out the front door and headed for the market. I wasn't sure how pleased the shopkeepers would be when we searched each one, but it didn't matter right now. All that mattered was finding Sawadi's wife and making sure she was safe.
"So are we going into every store?" Nike asked as we marched across Narsglow.
"Yup, no stone left unturned," I said. "Queen's orders."
"Who would kidnap Sawadi's wife?"
Aliona wondered.
"It seems like an odd crime."
"Sawadi had to have upset quite a few people yesterday,"
Sky pointed out.
"Yeah, stopping the execution might be exactly what put a target on his wife's back,"
Isabella agreed.
"At least we know it wasn't Yaholo. He's still in the dungeon, right?"
"He's not getting out anytime soon," I said. "We still haven't caught Ubira's murderer, though."
"But wouldn't a murderer have just killed Mata, too?"
Aliona wondered, and they looked at Nokomis, who had stayed pointedly silent during our speculation. "Depends on what the point of it all is," I murmured. "The most blood or the biggest emotional turmoil?"
"You were right, Lord Evan,"
Mariah said in a sad voice.
"The people are bloodthirsty."
"And their thirst was not quenched yesterday," I agreed. "Which means we have to find her before they take out their frustration on an innocent woman instead." Our conversation ceased as we reached the first row of shops, and we split into two groups to cover more ground. Nike, Rebecca, Ravi, and Skye went along the north side of the road, while Aliona, Mariah, Nokomis, Isabella, and I took the south. I twisted the knob of the first shop and was surprised to find it unlocked, and we crept inside a building with several rows of shelves filled with bottles, vials, and jars.
"I thought they didn't allow magic,"
Isabella whispered as she examined a row of bottles.
These look like potions.
They're medicinal,
Aliona explained as she picked up a jar filled with red goo.
No magic necessary, and sometimes no logic either.
Apothecaries are not trained properly,
Mariah agreed and tapped on a metal bottle.
I highly doubt this actually contains a lizard that brings you luck.
Well, it might contain a lizard,
Aliona said with a smirk. I motioned for everyone to quiet down as we continued through the building, but nothing looked out of place in the front room or the storage area in the back. There were just more vials and strange liquids stacked up in boxes and on shelves. I used my echolocation magic to be sure, but it seemed the building was empty. Okay, let's keep moving, I said, and led them back out the front door. We cleared the next store without incident, but the owner of the third store had already started preparing his displays for the day. He stared at our silent entry with a mixture of confusion and concern, and I held my finger up to my lips and pointed to the back of the store.
Who are you? He whispered, and then realized Nokomis was with us. Wait, Your Highness?
Orders of the King and Queen, I answered under my breath. We need to check the building.
Of course,
he stammered and stepped behind his counter. We brushed past him and opened the door at the back of the shop, but it held nothing more than a broom, mop, and some buckets. Is this all of your store? I demanded.
Yes, my lord, the shopkeeper confirmed. Mine is smaller than the others because I don't have any need for the storage. The store to the east has all the space behind that back wall.
That's where we're headed next, I said, and led my lovers outside again.
I have a bad feeling about this one, my lord,
Isabella whispered as she pulled two small daggers from her belt. Me too, I agreed. Be ready for anything. Nokomis and I unsheathed our noble swords, and I gently eased the door open without a sound. Our silent entry made no difference. What had once been a flower shop full of bright colors and beauty was now covered with spilled soil and heavily armed men who gripped swords, knives, bows, and morning stars. There were at least 10 of them, but I couldn't see any of their faces, thanks to black hoods pulled down over their faces with only tiny slits cut in the fabric for their eyes. My biggest concern, however, was the snow leopard demi-human woman who was tied up at the back of the room. I could see the brilliant blue sparkle of her signature earrings, just as Tecumseh had predicted. Two of the men stood on either side of her with knives held in easy throat-cutting distance, which meant I couldn't blitz-attack the kidnapping club. The stains of tears on Mata's cheeks and a bruise just below her eye made my jaw clench with anger, and I tightened my grip on the Sword of Healing as I slowly stepped further into the room.
I wouldn't come much closer, dragon, one of the masked men chuckled. I could have Mata killed in a matter of seconds.
I'm a pretty fast guy, asshole, I snarled. I could kill all of you in a matter of seconds, too.
One of the men who stood behind the apparent leader froze for a moment, but the leader shook his head and clucked his tongue.
Now, is that any way to treat the citizens of Nazglo who have apparently welcomed you with open arms?
He said, and pressed an offended hand to his chest.
Our lovely king and queen have shown you great hospitality, and you come in here calling me names.
I could think of a few worse things, I growled, as I summoned a fiery shield. Wanna see?
Even through the small holes, I could see several of the men's eyes widened with fear at my small show of power. And I bared my teeth in a feral grin as I waited for one of them to make a move.
That won't be necessary, the leader said with a wave of his hand. We only want one death.
And who might that be?
Nokomis demanded as she stepped forward to stand next to me.
Katahi, of course, he shot back. He's the only one who deserves such punishment.
And you don't,
she retorted.
You've kidnapped a member of the royal family and are holding her hostage.
She's only a member of the royal family by marriage, he replied with a shrug. That hardly counts. And since the queen's gone soft, we could argue it isn't treason.
If I walk over there and take her, what will you do to stop me?
Nokomis asked as her grip tightened on the Sword of Mercy.
I'm not a royal by marriage, right?
Come now, Your Highness. We don't need to do anything rash, the leader said and shook his head.
We have no intention of harming you or Marta. We merely wanted the Queen's attention. Where is she?
At the palace with Marta's husband, I replied. And they're all going to be pissed when they get here, so the smart choice would be to just let her go now and surrender. As the leader pretended to think it over, I tried to figure out a way to send word to Isi without conjuring a messenger dragon right in front of the kidnappers. I didn't want her or the king to barge in and get attacked too, but she needed to know we'd found Marta. Then I remembered something Mariah had said to me a few weeks ago about how I could always call to her even if she wasn't in my spiritual sea. "Mariah, can you hear me?" I asked her.
"I'm afraid we can't do that," the leader finally said. "We currently have leverage, and we intend to keep it that way until we have our audience with the queen and the musk ox's head on the ground."
"You have no idea what you're asking,"
Nokomis hissed.
"There is more to the situation than you know."
"I can hear you,"
the sword spirit said.
"What do we do?"
"You need to go get Queen Isi," I told her, and I kept my eyes on the kidnappers as I spoke to her. "Tell her Marta is unharmed for now, but she needs to talk to them. Can you tell one of your sisters to go get her?"
"Bastards,"
Mariah grunted.
"I think I'm close enough to call out to Juniper. Then Sky can go tell the queen."
"Do it," I said, and then refocused on the conversation with the kidnapping leader.
"So I'd say I know enough,"
he finished and crossed his arms over his chest. Yeah, magic is banned. He broke the law," I said as I rolled my eyes. "That's the only part anyone cares about, but like the princess said, you don't know everything."
"He didn't even stop that creature from attacking," the leader insisted. "He didn't become a hero who deserves pity. He's a criminal, and so are you. Maybe I should demand your head as well. I'm sure the queen will agree Marta's life is worth that much."
"You'd threaten another royal?" I arched an eyebrow at him and laughed. "I really think you might have lost your marbles."
"My marbles?" he echoed. "Don't speak in riddles, dragon. There is no justice for the crime until the mage is dead."
"You don't even know what justice is,"
Nokomis argued.
"Justice is about setting things right. And killing Katahi doesn't do that. It doesn't help anyone."
"It helps all the people of Odraine feel safer,"
he said, as he took a step closer to Nokomis.
"We'd all sleep better knowing Katahi couldn't use any more blood magic. For all we know, he's the one who summoned the beast that attacked us."
I took a half step in front of Nokomis to keep him from getting any closer to her as the fire burned in my chest.
"If only you knew how ridiculous you sound,"
Isabella muttered under her breath.
"Does the fairy have something to add?"
the kidnapping leader asked, as his eyes darted past me to Isabella.
"I'm not a fairy,"
she spat out.
"And you're making a big mistake. If the queen doesn't kill you, Lord Evan will. He doesn't take kindly to people hurting innocents."
Isabella had obviously picked up on my barely controlled rage, and my inner dragon roared with the desire to roast the kidnappers where they stood. But I wasn't sure if I could keep the flames away from Marta, so I resisted the urge as my lip curled with disdain.
"She chose to marry one of the royals," the leader snorted.
"Are you implying she chose to be kidnapped?"
Nokomis asked, as her mouth dropped open in shock.
"Well, I'm just saying," he started.
Then the cold air seemed to drop another 20 degrees, as Isi, Tecumseh, and Tawa barged into the shop and stood next to me. Nokomis shrugged her shoulders back with triumph, and the kidnappers all took a cowering step backward.
"You were just saying what, exactly?"
Isi asked in a chilly voice.
"I was just saying how reasonable our lovely queen is when it comes to handling criminals in Odraine," he said, as he adjusted the grip on his morning star. "I knew you'd come and agree to finish the execution to save Marta."
"I agree to nothing,"
the queen hissed.
"And if you think I don't recognize your voice, Leno, you're an even bigger fool than I thought."
The other men sucked in sharp breaths as the leader fumbled for a moment and then removed his mask. Leno was some type of reptilian demihuman, though I wasn't sure what type would live in such a cold climate. His yellow eyes blinked once as he gaped at the queen, and yellow and brown scales dotted the skin on his forehead and cheeks.
"I'm no fool, Your Majesty," he retorted. "I knew you'd come running for Marta. You always have."
"Taking advantage of a long-time friendship is beneath even you,"
Isi said, and put her hands on her hips.
But our friendship has been over for many years, and I will not hesitate to offer you the punishment you seek for Katahi if you don't release Mata in the next 10 seconds.
Leno froze, and his mouth hung open in surprise. This was an unexpected development, and I could see the reptile seemed to expect some kind of special treatment since he knew the queen, but Isi had no intention of letting him get away with the kidnapping.
But we just won't, Leno started.
6!
Isi cut him off and began to tap her toe on the floor.
I have no problem giving Lord Evan permission to use the various forms of magic he has available on you, Leno. 4!
Come on, Leno! One of the other kidnappers begged. Just do it! It's not justice!
Leno stomped his foot in frustration.
2!
The queen nearly whispered. I let the flames on my shield rise and flicker for dramatic effect, until the demi-human leader finally threw up his hands and sighed.
Let her go,
he said, with a look of defeat on his reptilian face. The other kidnappers lowered their knives to cut the ropes around Mata's torso, and she raced forward to sag into Tawa's arms.
Thank you,
she breathed with relief.
Guards, take Leno and his cohorts to the dungeons, Tecumseh ordered. I think they'll find some company there.
The same place where Katahi is, Leno grumbled. He'll probably put some evil magic on us or something.
Or you can get to know him and see he's a reasonable person,
Nokomis said with a furrowed brow.
Doubt it,
the lizard demi-human muttered. Do oxen eat lizards, I wondered? Because I'd much prefer he does that than evil magic. Evil magic wouldn't take as long.
I'm a gecko demi-human,
Leno scowled as the guards tied thick cords around his hands behind his back.
Not a lizard.
Well, maybe they eat geckos, I said with a shrug. I could roast you up for him, you know. Leno's yellow eyes widened with fear, and then he looked down at his feet as the royal guards led him out the front door with his men right behind them.
I'd very much like to watch you roast him for doing that to Mata,
Isi said with a curled lip as the last of the kidnappers left the shop.
I can think of at least 10 different ways he should be executed for this fiasco.
Let's not be hasty, my queen, Tecumseh advised her. We have our city meeting in a little while, and we can deal with your old friend after that.
Yeah, what was that about? I asked. You knew that lunatic?
Leno and I were classmates when we were children,
the queen explained as we all began to make our way back to the castle.
As were Mata and I.
Some of Isi's fiery rage began to subside as she held Mata's hand and walked down the road away from the market. Huh, I guess I never thought about the queen going to school, I chuckled.
Of course. I had to have a proper education,
she replied and pursed her lips.
You're a lord of your city. Didn't you take classes?
Yeah, I said with a half smile. I sure did. Granted, they were regular classes at a regular school for your average everyday human, but she didn't need to know all the earthly details.
We should get back to the palace, Tecumseh urged us. I don't think Suwati was very happy we made him stay behind.
It was for the best,
Mata said and offered the king a soft smile.
He would have been devastated to see me like that.
He'll still be devastated that you were injured,
Isi murmured and gently touched the bruise on Mata's cheek. I can help with that, I suggested, before I quickly healed the bluish-purple mark that blemished her skin. There, it's gone.
Your healing power is quite remarkable,
the queen said as she looked over Mata's face.
I've never heard of such an ability in a dragon. He was born with it,
Aliona explained.
It's been quite handy on our mission.
I'm sure it has.
Isi smiled as she squeezed Mata's hand and continued to the palace. No snide remarks about my use of magic, not even a stern glare at the fire shield she obviously saw when they came into the shop. Maybe the queen was warming up to the idea that magic could be used for good. Suwati was already on the front steps when we came into view of the palace, and he raced across the snow with the deftness of his cat side before he scooped his wife up into his arms and hugged her close.
Oh, thank the gods, he murmured.
And your sister,
she reminded him with a glance over her shoulder.
I'm very proud of the restraint she showed with Leno.
Leno kidnapped you?
Suwati asked and looked at his twin.
What did you do to him?
Well, I didn't kill him,
Isi smirked.
But he's in the dungeons now. I guess he thought taking Mata would make me go through with Katahi's execution.
What did you promise him? Sawadi narrowed his eyes on the queen with apparent suspicion. Is there an execution plan now?
Why would I give in to him?
Isi retorted.
I told him to let Mata go, or he'd be the one getting an execution today. I don't let criminals tell me what to do with criminals.
And then you let him live, her brother said, and the suspicion didn't quite leave his voice.
Yeah, I don't just go around executing every criminal on the spot.
She shot back and pursed her lips.
I can't guarantee that I won't kill him, but I haven't.
Listen, Isi, Sawadi sighed. I know you want revenge for what he did to Mata, but you can't let their actions determine yours. You did the right thing by putting him in jail for now.
Your mercy knows no bounds,
Isi said in a sarcastic tone.
If it was Tecumseh, I'm not sure if I'd be able to resist the urge to have my revenge.
And then you would be the one living with that decision, he reminded her. I'm always here to remind you that strength isn't always about who can tear the most heads from their shoulders. Sometimes it's about who can understand their people best.
I have been feeling a little disconnected,
the queen said and scrunched up her nose in annoyance.
I suppose this little city meeting should help with that.
Absolutely, I grinned. But I do suggest getting breakfast first. It's hard to deal with the annoying ones without food.
Yes, breakfast, then meeting, Tecumseh agreed as he ushered us inside.
Mata and Suwati sat together at the dining table and huddled closely as they ate their breakfasts in content silence. Isi and Tecumseh took bites and intermittently discussed what would happen at the meeting, and I considered joining in the conversation but decided against it. I'd given them a few ideas already, and I didn't need to hold their hands through the entire process. They had just needed a different idea to get back in touch with their people, which was made very clear by the kidnapping this morning. There was obviously an issue with the way Katahi's trial had been handled, and it felt like the people really had no idea what was going on with the tribal's use of magic. I really wanted the royals to agree to get rid of the ban and start magic education for the citizens of Narsglow, but we needed to take baby steps. And the first step was making sure they didn't kill a mage just because he'd tried to help them with magic. By the time we finished breakfast, it was time to leave for the meeting, and the guards formed a protective circle around all of us. I wasn't used to having a royal guard, and honestly, we didn't need it. But it certainly brought extra attention to us as we walked toward the Volan. I wasn't sure what to expect when the king and queen had named a location large enough for all the citizens of Narsglow to gather. But I could agree the Volan certainly fit the bill. The building reminded me of a stadium or coliseum with a huge open space surrounded by row after row of seating. There was room for thousands of people to fit comfortably in the audience, and several rows were already filled with Narsglow residents. A large table had been set out in the middle of the Volan, and half a dozen chairs were lined up against it.
I don't think there's enough room for all of us out there, Nike said with a sly smile. So I guess you can be the one in the spotlight, brother.
Oh, thanks, I muttered, as Nike led Mata and my lovers over to the stadium seating. I plopped down next to Nokomis, and Tawa, Tecumseh, Sawadi, and Isi sat down at the table and read over their notes.
This is very exciting,
Nokomis said in a low voice as she looked around at the gathering crowd.
I feel like we're about to perform.
This is much more like a stage than our meeting place in Hatra, I replied with a grimace. There aren't stacking rows of people watching us there.
Maybe I'll get to see it one day,
she nearly whispered. Well, that would be great, I agreed as I turned to smile at her. You're always welcome to go wherever I do. I felt a warm glow across our soul bridge, and something told me the snow leopard demi-human would be more than happy to go back to Hatra with us. Nokomis giggled and turned her attention to her father as he rose from his chair and held out his hands.
Thank you all for coming, he boomed. Today we are here to discuss a few current issues in our beautiful city, and Queen Isi and I have decided we'd like to include our people in that discussion.
Shocked whispers rippled throughout the crowd at the king's words, and Isi stood up to address the people as well.
It's something we've never done before, but with all the violence and uncharacteristic behaviors taking place as of late, it seems we have to step outside the norm and find a solution together,
she declared.
First, we will discuss the violence against our fellow citizens, the musk ox demihumans.
A few of the ox demihumans in the crowd turned to each other with looks of concern and confusion, and the guards had to quiet the rising voices of the other people. One ox demihuman relatively close to us raised his hand, and Isi pointed at him to give him permission to speak.
Your Majesty, we have done nothing to warrant the treatment we have received, he said carefully.
Then he looked around as though he waited to be attacked.
My home was vandalized, and my children have been called names and been picked on for 2 days straight. It's outrageous.
Yeah, outrageous,
another muskox agreed.
Well, you shouldn't be associating with criminals,
a woman called out from a few rows over.
None of us even know him,
the man insisted, as he wrung his hands in front of him and snorted with frustration.
Do you see what we're dealing with? I'd never even seen Katahi until his trial, and the other demihumans are acting like we were in the same herd.
That's certainly one of the points we'd like to address, Tecumseh said, and motioned for everyone to sit back down. We have investigated Katahi and his associations thoroughly, and we have found absolutely no relationship between him and the muskoxen demihumans living in Narsglo. In fact, it would appear Katahi had never entered the city walls until he was brought here for his trial.
The muskox man smiled with triumph, while the outspoken woman crossed her arms over her chest in annoyance. But no one argued with the king's information. Most of the people actually seemed satisfied to hear the royals had looked into the possibility of Katahi having made friends in Narsglo, and they couldn't dispute the facts. I had high hopes the first part of the city meeting would shut down the behavior against the ox demihumans, and I smiled as Isi glanced over at me with a sigh of relief.
Now that we've established there is no reason to attack our fellow citizens, we can move on to the issue of Katahi's execution,
Isi said.
I would like to hear from someone who is in support of the punishment of death.
Dozens of hands shot into the air, and the queen narrowed her eyes before she pointed to a squirrel demihuman a few rows from the bottom.
Thank you, your majesties,
the woman said with a curtsy.
My friends and I have discussed the trial at length, and we believe Katahi deserves execution because the law clearly states practicing magic is punishable by death. He admitted to his illegal action, and he should get the consequence written.
There were a few murmurs of support as the squirrel woman sat down and put her hands in her lap.
Thank you.
The queen nodded and focused on the rest of the crowd.
Now, does anyone have a different reason in support of execution?
No one moved, and I glanced at Aliona, who shook her head in disbelief. It was just as we'd thought. The only reason people wanted an execution was because of the way the law was written. It had nothing to do with believing Katahi actually deserved to die, since they had no clue why the magic he'd done was dangerous. Perhaps you should ask if anyone is against the execution, I suggested in a soft voice.
All right,
Isi agreed.
Is there anyone who does not support Katahi's execution?
A slightly smaller number of hands shot up, but I was pleasantly surprised to see the crowd was almost evenly split. After the mob we'd witnessed, I'd expected to see the ones who didn't favor death to be a much less populated group. But it seemed more people had been swayed by the ox demihuman's explanation. The queen pointed to an arctic hare demihuman, and the man trembled as he stood up and looked at the queen.
Oh, your majesty, a lot of us don't understand why Katahi has to die for trying to save us, he said in a shaky voice. We know it didn't work like he planned, but he could have easily let the creatures he killed attack the city, and no one would have ever known he'd seen them before. It doesn't seem right.
A round of applause echoed through the Volan, and the king held up his hand to silence the crowd again.
I see,
Isi murmured and turned to her husband, who nodded his head.
It would appear our people have good reasons for both sides. And perhaps now you understand why we decided to wait to make a decision. A man's life is at stake, and that is a decision no one should take lightly. The law was written a long time ago, and we want to ensure it makes sense for our people today.
Does anyone even know why the law was written?
Nokomis asked suddenly.
I mean, we know the stories of the Vis Imperio, but do they?
The queen paused and looked at her daughter with a thoughtful gaze before she turned back to the audience.
By raising your hand, who knows why the ancestral royals banned magic?
She asked. My eyes widened as I looked all around us and saw less than 20 hands in the air. The rest of the people whispered to each other to try to figure it out. But it seemed no one even had a clue about the Vis Imperio or their attack on the palace. Your Majesties, could I suggest something? I whispered.
Of course,
E.C. answered as her brow furrowed in confusion.
Do you think we should tell them why?
Here? I chuckled. No, I don't. I do think you should remember that you and King Tecumseh are the current leaders of Odraine, which means you can change anything you want, including the punishment on the magic ban.
Are you reminding me of your alternative idea, Lord Evan?
She asked with a slightly amused smile. Yes, I admitted and grinned. But this would be the perfect way to satisfy the people. If half of them only want to execute Katahi because the law says you should, but the other half thinks he deserves mercy, then why not rewrite the law to say you and the king may decide what punishment the person deserves? He has a point, my dear, Tecumseh said in a low voice. We're in charge, and we can change things to keep our people happy. Isi chewed on her bottom lip as she met her husband's gaze, and after a few seconds, she finally nodded.
Let's make a change,
she agreed, before she raised her voice to address the crowd again.
We have made our decision. Two decisions, actually. First, we declare a change to the law regarding the use of magic in Odraine. Violation of the law will result in punishment, though the decision of execution is not guaranteed. The decision will be made by the king and queen, and based on the extent of magic used, and for what purpose.
A few people in the crowd gasped, and a mixture of cheers and groans erupted from the stadium.
Your queen is not finished, Tecumseh thundered.
His voice brought the conversation to a screeching halt, and Isi smiled at him before she continued.
Secondly, with the new change in place, Katahi is not sentenced to death,
she continued.
He will receive a public flogging and is ordered to complete 1 year of servitude in the palace, where we will ensure he has learned his lesson.
There was a brief pause, and then most of the crowd burst into applause. I grinned as I watched several of the people who had supported execution clap and look at each other with obvious apprehension for the king and queen's decision. It had been the best of both worlds, and now the outliers were the few who still grumbled with disgust at the queen's announcement. Then one man caught my eye. He looked more than annoyed or disgusted with the decree, and his face was twisted with rage. He appeared to be a penguin demihuman, with his orange beak-like nose and dark hair that outlined his pale face. Suddenly he leapt from his seat and stomped down the steps, and before the guards could react, he had jumped down onto the field and began to sprint toward the table with his enraged eyes focused on the queen. Then he pulled a shiny dagger from his robe and lifted it above his head.